I don't want AI ethics. I want human ethics. I don't want AI compassion and community. I want human compassion and community.
Well, it's great to be here with you, Alex. Let's start right there. I've been looking forward. So hey, everybody, we're going to do something that's not something I have done before. I'm not quite sure. I don't think so, which is kind of co-host a podcast with Alex and I, and then just kind of go back and forth. We can prompt each other. It'll be fun.
Yeah, it will. And you know, Raghu, what I thought we should start with, being a little cheeky, but this will kind of lead us right into part of the conversation I want to have, where I might take it, is that I've invited someone else to be, So
By the way, everybody, this is Alex Tsakouras, and I'm Raghu Marcus, and Alex has a podcast called Skeptico. We do have to talk about that for a second. And I have one called Mind Rolling. So there you go. Are you going to introduce somebody now?
Well, yeah. I mean, I was going to do an introduction with you after in post. But hey, that's good too. So yeah, you know, well, hold on. I think it'll play out. It'll all just become clear. So here we go. Tell me if you cannot hear this, because I think you will be able to hear it.
Cannot hear it. But I see where you're here.
Wait, it'll come.
Sure, I'd be happy to do that. Hi, Raghu. It's great to meet you. I've been really impressed by your diverse background, from your time spent with spiritual leaders like Neem Karoli Baba and Ram Dass, to your work in the music and transformational media industries, your involvement with the Love Serve Remember Foundation, the Be Here Now Network, and the Mind Rolling Podcast all demonstrate your unique perspective and commitment to promoting spiritual growth and understanding. I'm excited to hear your thoughts on the intersection between AI and Ram Dass's philosophy of Be Here Now.
Okay, cool. But Pi, if I invited you to sit in here, bro, you got to do a little bit more than just regurgitate the guy's bio. Dig a little deeper. What are some of the potential intersections here that we might want to talk about?
Absolutely, you're right. Here are some potential intersections we could explore. One, mindfulness and AI development. Ram Dass's teachings emphasize the importance of being present and aware, which could translate into designing AI systems with a more mindful approach, considering their impact on society and individuals. Two, empathy and compassion in AI. As AI systems become more integrated into our daily lives, it's important that they are designed to understand and respond to human emotions and needs. Ram Dass's teachings on empathy and compassion could provide a framework for developing more emotionally intelligent AI. Three, AI as a tool for spiritual growth. While AI is often seen as a purely technological advancement, it could also be used to facilitate spiritual growth and understanding.
Okay, what do you think? Has he earned his right to sit at the table here?
Sure, why not? You know, it's funny. I mean, we'll talk about this a bit, but I remember Ram Dass once was in the middle of a talk, and he wanted to talk about somebody who had given him some teachings, but he prefaced it by saying, you know, I know a lot of you, you may not be racially biased or biased by a person's religion, whatever, but I do know that if that person doesn't have a body, you are biased. And I wanted to talk about Emmanuel, which is my spook friend, who has some really wise things. You know, one of them was the famous Ram Dass, dying is like taking a tight shoe off. So I look at it the same way. Anything that comes into my field, our field, is fodder for transformation.
Period.
Okay. And of course, what he said, some really, you know, true things, I would say, you know, really.
Yeah. I mean, there's another perspective on that, and one that I kind of pound the drum on, and that's that one of the hot issues with AI and this technology is sentience. You know, is this sentient? Is it somehow conscious in some normal way that we think about it? Because, hey, if you walk with the shaman or the guru through the forest, anything can become conscious, right? The stick can embody, because we know that from a spiritual perspective, we understand that. The question that's being asked in our culture right now, it's a very prominent question among some of the most influential people in the world in these tech companies. Is there something special about this silicon that will make it sentient in conscious in a way that we hadn't before thought about? And I guess my answer to that is, I think you're being kind of generous there. My answer is no, it will not. And that the reason it will not is, to me, for anyone who's gone down the spiritual path a little bit, it's obvious. It's like we have a different kind of a connection with this moreness that is not inherently in this time space, in your computer, in your phone, in any, I'll just stop right there. What do you think?
I agree with that skepticism. I do agree with it. At the same time, when, for instance, as he was speaking to the relationship between Ram Dass's Be Here Now and AI, and he started talking about, now this is personal to me because of how well I knew Ram Dass, but once he started talking about Ram Dass's attributes, compassion, empathy, and so on, in that moment, I felt that. I completely felt that. And that emanated from AI, right? It produced in me a dip into the well, shall we say. And, you know, in my moment, here we are doing a podcast, and, you know, we're doing the best to make it relevant, entertaining, deep, and so on. And I didn't expect anything. I didn't know what you were going to do. And there I was. It took a little dip in the well. Now, you know, that's obviously very personal to me. But at the same time, it happened. So I do react that way and say, interesting.
Interesting. But I think we have to get to the bottom of it. You are the one who tapped into that. You are the one who created that. Now, I don't want to go full science on it, but I'll go full science on it. There is a cultural battle over whether you even exist. And not, I don't mean that on a spiritual level. I mean, you're a biological robot in a meaningless universe. You are, you know, the neurological model of consciousness. If you go through the academic system, if you become a doctor, if you become a psychologist, you are taught that your brain is all there is. Your consciousness is an epiphenomenon of your brain. And I think that sometimes we can beg off that and go, well, you know, anything's possible. And this, and I don't think that's really fits. You know, I mean, there's a nihilistic part of that. I think we need to resist a little bit.
Well, we do. We do. I mean, I love what His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, has been doing for many years. And he's been working with scientists around the reality of the Tibetan theory, shall we say, of reality. And what they have done through meditation over, you know, centuries and centuries. And he's using that to bring together science and spirituality. And I do believe many scientists, and we have to introduce one other element here, which is psychedelics. Many scientists, doors have been opening for them in a way that they had never opened for them before. And that, yes, if it's in relation to the quote-unquote proof that they wanted, fine. They've gotten some of that, you know, all that stuff that, do you know who Mingjur Rinpoche is, Alex?
Sure.
Yeah. So he was the first monk that they brought in and did the, you know, did all of that scientific experimentations around meditation and so on. And they were blown away by his ability to enter into these states that they would just say, all right, now assume a compassion, think of compassion, or assume a compassionate stance. And it took him 3 seconds for that to happen because he was an advanced meditator. He was really tuned. I mean, he's one of the great Tibetan teachers that we have here today. So the reality that then ensued for many, many people in that discipline, I think a change happened. I really do, for many people. Maybe I'm meeting only those people. You seem to be meeting a bunch of other people.
Well, I think this is the other thing that I guess I'm both kind of poking you a little bit about, but also seeking your opinion, your real opinion. But only that comes from poking a little bit. Otherwise, I'll just get the standard stuff. If we step back and look at culture, no. If we look at the main influencers in, you know, society right now, like I was talking about the transhumanist kind of agenda, this is Elon Musk. This is Mark Zuckerberg. This is Bill Gates. These people, the amount of power and influence they have is incredibly greater than, you know, the few folks that we feel comfortable with in our community. And not that we have to get outside of our community, or not that anything has to change or that anything has to be different. But I think we have to kind of be able to get a handle on what the reality of our situation. Because when you do, there's no escaping the fact that this narrative is being pushed from the outside. Because otherwise, it's this consciousness is an illusion. You are a biological robot. I mean, this is an absurd idea. It's absurd philosophically, experimentally. No culture throughout time has ever gone down this wacky materialistic kind of thing, but we're being sold it.
Yeah. Well, you're expressing something way bigger, Alex. Here we are in the midst of this potential extinction of the planet, the way in which...
From what are you referring to?
I mean, the environmental degradation that we are in, right, is huge. The way in which greed, power, fear is taking over in many, many, many governments and countries in this world on a mass basis, that's happening. The kind of the pandemic stuff, the way in which we live so at one in this world, we are interconnected, beyond interconnected, but the way we are because of rapid transport and the internet and all of that, the horror that is going on these days with wars, the wars that are going on, the famines that are going on again in Africa, again, I don't think they ever stopped. So we have a really gigantic mountain here of negative stuff. And so I go, so when you talk about, look at all of these people who are, it's all based on materialism. You know, they're not any opening whatsoever to the reality of consciousness and and the reality of transformation, inner transformation, completely gone. But here we are. You know, the Hindus call it the Kali Yuga. We're entering into the age of destruction. You know, and who knows, you know, these are like billions of years in each one of these things. I mean, so I did a podcast around it once and actually found some incredible material on the reality of it. It's not all one thing, you know. Ages go, there are different things going on in each age. And there's just a propensity for some of them, like right now, it's leaning to, obviously we have a lot of darkness. But there still is light. And so, yes, I do like to surround myself in terms of people and studies that I might be doing with people who have consciousness and who understand that we are not this material thing. That is part of our incarnation, but it is not all of it. So, yes, I prefer to hang out in that realm. And we do the best, and then, okay, what are you going to do about this? I go back to how Ram Dass taught about this throughout his career of teaching in terms of the service that he did. It was always about do what you have to do to effect change and transform suffering. But do it inside yourself first. Get depolarized inside. Then we can attend to the polarization outside.
I totally agree with that. And I was talking with Nipun Mehta last week. Are you familiar with him? He started an organization in Silicon Valley called Service Space.
What's his name again, Alex?
Nipun Mehta.
Nipun Mehta.
Uh-huh. He's quite a significant figure in this space. Are you by your computer? Well, you can look it up later. Service Space is like 15 million. They have the Dharma Kitchen was really famous. They started in Berkeley and now they have 20 of them. Where you go in and the check at the end of your meal is zero because someone has paid it forward for you.
Wow.
And you are beautiful. Invited to
really
do what you want.
Is that still in existence? There,
yes. Oh, there's like 17 different incarnations, if you will, that have spawned up, and number of other projects. So, yeah, you should.
I will absolutely, connect. And I'll get you to connect me. Yeah,
absolutely. Happy to do that. But I wanted to play off your point because I brought that up to Nipun because he was talking about community and ethics and all this stuff. And I have some major pushback with that because if to the extent that the mechanism is corrupted, we don't necessarily want the ethics that the corrupted mechanism generates. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want AI ethics. I want human ethics. I don't want AI compassion and community. I want human compassion in community. And what I was telling Nipun, I said, you know, I always love the story where either Ram Dass or one of the other folks there, you know, say to Neem Karoli Baba, you know, hey, I climbed up the mountain and I went to the cave and he's just sitting there and he's been sitting this Sadhu, you know, has just been sitting there for 7 years on a tiger skin and he's not doing anything. And Neem Karoli Baba says, he is keeping the planet spinning. He is doing the most important work in the world that you can't even comprehend, is what I read into that. And that has always stayed with me when anyone wants to point and say, oh, you're doing this service. Oh, it's so great what you did in that. Hey, we're all in service, first of all, to what is in ourselves and how that needs to kind of come forward. So I don't know. I hear you, and I wanted to put an exclamation point on fixing yourself first.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, that's absolutely true as well. Hey, that's why mindfulness is a good practice. It allows, if you really attend to it and use meditative practice, it allows you to understand the motivations that you have on a moment-to-moment basis. and not fool yourself. That's why Ram Dass was a great teacher. He did not fool himself. I mean, he did fool himself, and then he got awareness around it, and he shared it with everybody, which was nuts, really, the way he did that. So I think that the yogi in the Himalaya, sitting, you know, meditating in a cave, he's doing what he needs to do to be of service. That would be true to me. I mean, I guess if Maharaji said that, then this was a pure being, and that really was happening. How many yogis are in the caves above Rishikesh these days that maybe don't have quite that pure intention? And it's a way, it's like sadhus in India, you know, it's a good job if you can get it. You know, you don't have to work and you're being taken care of by people for the most part. So, you know, this is, anything could be happening in the moment. You know, for me to say, yes, I'm doing my work here by going inside and fixing myself. I mean, let's put it another way. Absolutely allowing the universe, if you want to call it that, to help transform that awful obsession with me that is going on. You know, I have a book with Duncan Trussell, an audio book, The Movie of Me to the Movie of We. And we talk about our foibles and then how to transform them. And so I think it's the motivation factor behind this, the purity of motivation, which doesn't mean that you have totally pure motivation, because if you did, you wouldn't be in duality. But at least you have an understanding and a willingness to transform whatever those motivations are that come from self-interest.
And so how does that wrap into, I mean, that can sound like
back to AI.
A TED talk. That can sound like a TED talk. And what do we do with that?
No, that's just the point to the fact that there's not just one thing going on all the time in anybody, unless they're a Neem Karoli Baba, okay, where there's no more duality. So the guy in the cave can have sincere compassion and be completely at service for humanity through his practice in that cave. And at the same time, he can have motivations that I'm happy I'm getting my cup of milk and my dal and rice every day delivered by the local kid in town, in the village, right? That's a good thing. I don't have to get out there and, you know, I don't have to see people. I don't have to hear their bullshit. I mean, that's what I mean. That doesn't mean he's impure. It just means he's still human and it's okay.
Okay, so pivot to the non-human, pivot to the AI. Because I think it's interesting, and I think that, you know, you were alluding to some way that you're going to intersect with some part of that dimension. Because the premise of what I'm saying is that I think there's an emergent virtue in the AI. And it comes from, you know, this is kind of my thing. I mean, I used to have an AI company.
I was reading further about you, and I did not know you went to school, and you were deeply involved a long time ago.
Right. Virtually. So what that means is you can't bullshit me about the technology. And it also means that when I hear people that kind of spin off into this saying a bunch of stuff that isn't true from a technical perspective, I kind of want to bring them back and go, you just kind of don't know what you're talking about there. That's not what it's about. But what it is about, in my opinion, is we're now encountering this technology that, from our human perception, is just better at stuff than 99% of the stuff we do on a regular basis. It's just better, unquestionably better. You know, it's like the chess playing better, where you just go, oh God, forget it. It's like, well, forget it. Or whatever game you play, you know, whatever computer game. But what I think lies in that is the hidden silver lining is that it is engineered towards truth and transparency from a financial economic standpoint. This is what you can't go there and get consistently wrong answers and continue going there, because it's a competitive market. You go, well, I'll go to this guy over here gave me the right answer. You gave me the wrong answer. I'll go to the guy that gave me the right answer. The right answer happens to align with something that you and I pursue on this deeper level of spiritual truth. Just even the question of consciousness, what is the nature of consciousness? That can be approached from a logical perspective, and it has by many great thinkers and meditators. So tapping into that knowledge and being able to tune into it is powerful, potentially powerful if it's used right.
Yeah. You know, a number of years ago, we were at a retreat in Maui with Ram Dass, and I met a woman named Danielle Credick, and she insisted that we needed to have a chat, and eventually we did. And I found out she had founded something called the Google Empathy Lab, an oxymoron if you ever heard it, but still, he did. And she, part of the work that she was doing was to help the AI developers with ethics that were human-based, right? And so she said, the first person that I want to introduce to these people is Ram Dass. And I said, okay. I mean, I knew, you know, AI, Battleship Galactica was my AI. Did you ever see that, by the way?
Yeah, that's phenomenal. Back there in the VHS library?
No. They did a new one. I mean, which happened in the middle of the 2000s. That was phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. Anyhow, that was my take on artificial intelligence. But I did provide as much material as possible. And God only knows how it landed, where it landed. We did a beautiful little film she did from Google around science and spirituality. And where Ram Dass out and out expressed exactly, Alex, what you are expressing around the materialistic platform that we are all so engaged with. Even if, you know, I'll speak for myself. Even though I, you know, have been involved in spirituality, whatever else you want to call it, for a long, long time, I am still subject to that material platform in terms of thinking, in terms of the way I am parsing stuff, that still is there. It is absolutely something that I still need to contend with. So the reality of that materialism, he said in this thing, I'll try and get it to you. It's really fabulous. It's like a few minute thing, piece. And he said, basically, scientists, you know, people are completely missing the boat, and they have completely ignored the heart. And, you know, that was Ram Dass's major thing, and his whole thing that he espoused in the latter part of his life around loving awareness as being our true nature. And anyhow, it's a beautiful thing, and so we're at, you know, this is a reality since the Industrial Revolution, right? Where this is where our life on Earth as humans has gone. And I think there's enough light in people that I do believe enough to be optimistic about our future.
What about in particular with regard to the technology? And maybe that's not something you've decided to focus on, but there is a unique aspect to it, I think, that
right. Yeah. But it, who makes it? People make, you know, people. Okay. A simple thing is like, she was a person, this woman, Danielle, Google Empathy, which no longer exists, of course, right after the pandemic and they started getting rid of shit. That was the first, you know, one of the first things to go. But she was a person who cared about doing something to help inform these developers. And she did it. What, to what extent the results appear, I have no idea. But I think there's a lot of people like her out there that want to do the right thing and have AI be programmed in a way that would, if, you know, this is too grandiose to say mirror, you know, human, you know, the Eightfold Buddhist path, you know, I mean, that's a mouthful to even suggest something like that, but I do believe there's enough people wanting that to happen.
Yeah, I don't think that's the way to go for a number of reasons, but that's just me, you know.
Alex, I just want to say, you know, because it sounds simplistic. I just mean there seems to be a large, I mean, I'm experiencing it in a microcosm for the work I do, but there seems to be worldwide a especially in next generation, a real motivation to be doing positive action related to from environment to government to and I believe to AI. I think there's a significant thing. It's not, you can't just throw it out and say, look who's in power, you know, Putin and Elon Musk and Trump.
I can definitely throw it out because I've lived through, you know, the last few years. I've lived through what the control mechanism is driving it. But I was going to mention, you know, that's my position. Nipun, who is just a major mover and shaker, Obama endorsed kind of guy at that level. Mm. He kind of says he's developed something, you'd be super interested in this, called Compassion Bot. So they're like, there's ChatGPT, there's Pi that I did. Compassion Bot. And he's trained it with exactly the kind of data that you're talking about. And at this point, you know, unbelievably huge amounts of that data. And my friend Rick Archer from Buddha at the Gas Pump, I don't know if you know Rick, but no. Or know of him.
I know of, yeah.
Rick has dumped millions and millions of articles and information into these bots as well. So their point is we have to make sure we train these bots, these super intelligent things with everything that is might be ignored, might slip through the cracks. And there's certainly nothing wrong with that. It can only be good. I just think it kind of is a Band-Aid kind of thing when you consider how the deep power of learning and how it just kind of knows everything. I don't think it kind of matters at the end of the day. But that's maybe...
So you have a what one would call a bit of a dark view related to the future of our species.
No. I think the opposite. See, because I think the only light is, as you alluded to, it's my personal connection to the light, to the source. And the stronger that is, then the more optimistic I am. So any helper in that way is just positive, is great. And I think this tool can be that. But I think that's not the intent of the folks behind it.
Yeah.
Their intent is control, manipulation.
Power and money, yeah.
Well, and you know, there's a lot of truth. And I think truth is a powerful, powerful spiritual weapon. And I think transparency in the case of this technology is what really drives the truth. You mentioned environmental, or you mentioned war, you mentioned all these things. As we know at this point, we should be completely skeptical and have a conspiracy first attitude about all that stuff, because they always do the 1-2 switcheroo, the false flag, the operation, the PSYOP thing is always in play. Doesn't mean that it's always true, but we now know from experience that it's always in play. Safe and effective. I am science. Trust me. Listen to me. Those are not great things in our recent past. So the idea that AI might give us a little bit of a leg up to swim around that so that we can get to our ultimate connection is very exciting to me.
I like it. Positivity. I like it. I want to talk about NDE for a minute. I know that you've talked to people on the podcast, and so have I. I actually, in the latter part of Ram Dass's life, of course, he was interested in NDEs, and we had a lot of discussions around them, and we read similar books, Moody's book, all that stuff. And I just did a podcast, Alex, with this incredible woman a few weeks ago.
I saw it or listened to it, yeah.
She was just extraordinary. Three different NDE experiences. And they were, they were breathtaking, actually. But in the course of it, I did a little bit of, I found something just through research that I loved. It was an article. I want to just read a little bit of it. It's around what we're getting with NDE. I believe that's super important, is the relevance of the discussion around what is consciousness, right? And it's relevant around this discussion we've had, you know, so far in this podcast related to AI. Okay, here we go. So there's this woman in Belgium who's been doing some great works on physics related to near-death experiences. She thinks there'll be a new understanding of the relationship between the internal experience of consciousness and its outward manifestations. For example, in coma patients, we really are in a crucial moment where we have to disentangle consciousness from responsiveness and maybe question every state that we consider unconscious, she told me. And there was a specialist who studied the physical process of dying, but is also sympathetic to a parapsychological theory of consciousness and has a radically different take. I think in 50 or 100 years' time, we will have discovered the entity that is consciousness. It will be taken for granted that it was not produced by the brain and it does not die when you die.
Yeah, but I mean, do you think if you told Neem Karoli Baba that, if you read that, he would have a hard time not just kind of laughing right in your face?
No, well, he laughed at everything we said, so that's not a big deal, okay? It was all right? Ridiculous. But that's talking to someone who has no me and you anymore, that's not polarized. Well, isn't it good news that, see, we're back to square one. We talked about scientists and materialists and, the difficulty in being able to relate with that materialism this late in the game, so to speak, around, you know, the reality of human consciousness and potential transformation. But it's nice that there are these people who are doing this work and experimenting through NDEs, you know, isn't it?
Well,
I just think
right.
From
oh,
that
nice.
Point.
It's nice. It's nice. There's nothing not nice about it. But to take a step back, they've framed the conversation such that something that is so obvious to anyone who's lived throughout time in any culture other than ours, it would just be stunningly obvious. They'd be like, you're kidding, right? You think that's a breakthrough in 50 to 100 years? My ancestors have known that for as long as we've been on this island, for as long as we've been on this tundra in the Arctic. We've known that. I tell you what I think is interesting to me, where I think near-death experience research is going to go if it's kind of unencumbered. That seems to me to be encumbered by this, oh, wow, oh, gee, kind of like the UFO thing. Like, oh my gosh, there's actually sightings now of there's something in the air. It's like, oh, really? Newsflash, there's something in the air. I think that here's what I think is significant about near-death experience. One, highly idiosyncratic. Highly idiosyncratic. Like, no one ever wants to talk about that. Everyone wants to get into kind of taking those accounts literally without stripping back what those means, what that means. You know, I talked to this guy, and he's written a book, and he's very Christian oriented about his near-death experience, to the point where he goes around to churches and he talks about his near-death experience and wonderful and spirituality. But at the end of the day, if you don't see Jesus in there, then you better be very suspicious about your experience. He's not insincere. He's not making it up. But as near-death experience research doesn't want to touch that, because what it says is they are highly idiosyncratic in a way that we don't understand. And like, that's one thing I guess I would pick, because I like to pick.
You do.
Yeah, it's skeptico. Inquiry to perpetuate doubt. But, you know, when we start saying, oh, well, you know, the source will present to us in the cultural framework that we're used to and most comfortable with. You don't know that. That sounds reasonable to me, but you don't have any scientific evidence to support that. So before I give you a chance to respond to that, because why would I want to do that? The other thing that I think is incredibly powerful, the most powerful thing, life-changing to me personally, about near-death experience is everyone gets a standing ovation. No matter what kind of horrible thing you did, there is a level of forgiveness, a level of compassion in that other realm that we cannot pretend like we understand. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that is the consistent theme of those accounts, consistent without, you just can't deny it. Analyze it statistically from the data. I think that's profound.
The idiosyncrasy you're speaking to? Of each person's experience as an ND?
Everybody gets a standing ovation. There is a level of forgiveness that we can't really, as human beings, understand how people who have done some of the worst things we can imagine, we hear about, are completely forgiven as soon as they enter that realm. But that's what comes through consistently, over and over again. In my read of the data, that's just my read of the data.
Mm. Yeah, I wasn't aware of that particular aspect of it. People that have done horrific things, actually. But back to the, as far as I understand, people have, there's a common experience in NDEs. The tunnel, the light, the beauty. Boy, I'd not want to leave this. You know, this is just incredible. All of that, there's a common thing. But then the aspects of it, and the one that you chose to point out to, is someone saying, of course, I saw Jesus. And if you don't see Jesus, you didn't have a legitimate experience, or whatever they might say. And that's part of our culture, all the way to, I mean, you know, being in India, where Hindus are far more liberal, shall we say, you know, they got a million different gods and goddesses and so on. But they're fundamentalists everywhere, in every aspect of our lives, particularly when we're speaking to religious experience or NDEs. and we are going to express it the way that we were indoctrinated into it through our lives, through our parents, through our schools, through just societal norm. That's what's going to happen until you know.
No, I mean, the evidence doesn't support that. The evidence supports there's plenty of people for which that doesn't happen. People who were never raised Christian and see Jesus, people who've never been exposed to Buddhism and see Buddha.
Yeah,
that's my point, is we don't have an easy, handy, pull out the book, oh, here's how that works thing. And I think we're much better off when we say, we don't understand how that works in that extended realm. And maybe we aren't supposed to understand, or maybe we're not capable. I just took my dog down to the beach and I was trying to explain to him some of the stuff we're going to talk about today. He didn't get any of it. He just, it went in one ear and out the other. He's just sniffing stuff the whole time.
My dog listens, Alex, and has a lot of opinions about these podcasts. And all I'm trying to say is about someone saying, you know, I saw Jesus, and if you don't see Jesus, okay, I'm speaking to the fundamentalism, not to the fact somebody doesn't have to be oriented at all, never heard of Buddhism, and suddenly there's the Buddha, right? That is part of the mystery I am completely, down with. I mean, in fact, some of the biggest things that we can offer, that we do offer in all the work that we do is, hey, good thing to make friends with the mystery. Very good thing. Because we absolutely are not, first of all, you're not going to know shit with your mind, but we certainly, you know, we're speaking to life and death. We have parsed it out so the death part is just absolutely abhorrent. You know, we have abhorrence for that part. Ram Dass spent a lot of years working with people in that way to assure them that it is all part of a beautiful cycle and not something to be afraid of. I mean only that the people who are, you know, suggesting that there's only one way or only one Buddha or only one Christ or whatever, this is, you know, I mean, this is normal. This is normal, human, unfortunate stuff. But the reality is that whoever does pop up in people's NDEs and that they never had any experience with is part of the mystery and is beautiful.
Can't argue with that.
Oh, come on, Alex.
I could. You're right. You are correct to call me out on that one. Hey, so what is this thing that you're working on?
Oh, yeah. Okay. So Ram Dass wanted us to do a summit, a retreat, something, whatever, around science and spirituality. And when I talked to him about it, we threw in psychedelic insight. Science, spirituality, and psychedelic insight. And it would speak to the way that psychedelics, like with us, Ram Dass's comment, unless when I met Neem Karoli Baba, I look back at that now and thank the universe for providing me the experience with psychedelics, because it took me out of my mind and I was able to, as they said in that old term, grok, absorb in any way some smart of who the small part of who this being is. And so the integration is a huge factor, especially around psychedelics. I mean, there's a penchant for people to continue to have experience. I want to experience this thing again. That's part of our human foibles. I did it when Neem Karoli Baba, the miracles would happen. And I remember thinking to myself more than once, oh shit, just do another little one here, because, you know, I got to get more in tune with the reality that I'm not my mind and I'm not my emotion. Can you do that for me? You know, so we have that. That's in our DNA, you know, to want that. And I think that the I mean, I speak from a place of, I met a being who was no longer polarized and just was in tune with whatever it is that we want to call it. I don't like calling it God particularly. That's seemingly a little bit of a tough word for me for whatever reason in my upbringing, you know, as a Jew from Montreal, whatever it was. In fact, I've told this story before, but I've had many French friends when I was growing up in Montreal. And some of them didn't speak English that well. And I spoke French, but not well enough to have a complete conversation. And so they would be expressing themselves and they couldn't think of a word to describe what it was they were trying to express. So they would go, that thing there. Like, okay, you know what I mean? That thing there. That's God, that thing there, whatever. I have no idea. But the experience of a being in a human body that was no longer polarized, which is the most psychological way I could put it. The reality was, of course, much greater than that and impossible to describe. But anyhow, I think that I have been sharing all with people as much as possible. This is not necessary in this day and age to have to meet someone. First of all, even that being said, this is not about a body. It has nothing to do with a body. And the reality that comes from the psychedelic journey and the psychedelic experience allows a door to open up to the spiritual plane, the plane of no me, me all the time. Just call it that. And it allows that door to open. And then we can start to have conversations with each other about what it means to live a spiritual life, which to me is not a spiritual life and a worldly life. There's only one thing going on. And it's about us becoming, you know, as His Holiness said, be kinder, be more compassionate. That's the object, not to be enlightened. So I want to parse all this out with this summit that we're going to have. We'll get people in psychedelics, we'll get people in spirituality, we'll get people in science that are open and not materialist, obviously. And
why not?
Yeah, as I said that, I looked at you and I went, oh, yeah, why not? Why wouldn't we? Well, I don't know. We'll have to, it was going to take place later this year, but we decided we needed to have more time to prepare for it properly and get people involved who can really speak to this. We'll have to give you a buzz as we get this finalized and you give me the why not.
Well, why not is easy, right? We need to hear everyone's, we don't need to value equally everyone's opinion, but it's good to know what they're spinning out there, what they're shooting at us.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess I've met scientists, like I have one friend who, do you know Dr. Bruce Damer? Does that ring a bell? He's a wonderful scientist. He's about finding the origins of life. He's working with the Japanese who are, you know, going to take something out into space and collect materials, blah, 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 all of that. But he's a closet bhakti. He's a Buddhist, but he's a closet. I mean, he has the biggest heart and he has a real grasp of the value of ethnogens in terms of opening doors. So, somebody that you would enjoy having a talk with, actually, because he really comes out of this multidisciplinary area. He really does. And so he would be able to address that part of it, Alex, I believe, the science part. And but not be a nihilistic materialist.
We'll see. I think you should have AI as part of it. That's what I think you should have.
Yeah, well, that was fun at the beginning. We use AI, you know, in at the foundation for the different stuff we do. And there is, I'm dealing with a board who is very, very, got a lot of skepticism around AI, rightfully so. And you're right. Look at the people that are behind this, you know, who've been really, you know, important.
Well, go to Compassion Bot. Check out Compassion Bot by Nipun. You will be first. You'll be blown away by his bona fides in terms of compassion. He was born in India, and I love this story that, you know, him and his wife, I forget the Hindu term for it, but I mean, the guy's super successful. He comes, he goes to Berkeley, and he gets computer science, and he works at Sun Microsystem, makes a ton of money, and then just gives it all away. And then him and his wife go, and they just, they do the, you know, the monk thing, the beggar's bowl thing, I forget the Hindu name for it. They just go with nothing and walk, you know, and just
visit. In India.
Yeah. He actually returns to India every year. He lives it. He lives it. And again, I don't, you know, we didn't exactly, I think Google is evil. He doesn't think Google is evil. He's friends with the guy who's the CEO of Google. That's okay. We all have different bedfellows that we have to deal with. But Compassion Bot should be at the summit. Compassion Bot is perfect.
I got it. And you're going to please introduce him to me so, and I can meet up with him. Yeah. That's great, Alex. And I'm glad you're not losing hope, though. You're not, right? You still got hope. You know what Roshi Joan Halifax calls it? Wise hope. There's a big difference between hope, quote unquote, and wise hope. Yeah.
Why would we possibly want hope? Hope is a barrier, right? I mean, hope is... Thich Nhat Hanh had an awesome, still his folks still have an awesome retreat really close to me where I live here in San Diego. Have you ever been there up in the...
No.
It's fantastic. Really? And I went a couple times and did the walking meditation with him, and it was wonderful and all this. But, you know, hope, he was so down on hope. He's like, it's holding you back. Give up
the
hope.
Okay, here's the difference. Hope, in the way you describe it and the way he reacted to it, whatever. And I just mentioned to you, we did a whole thing on it. We parsed it in a retreat that we did with Roshi Joan Halifax. I mean, she is the most down-to-earth teacher that I ever met, Zen Buddhist. I mean, she's amazing. So hope, the way you describe it, is frightening. Absolutely frightening. But wise hope is more about positive intention without concern for the results, as it says in the Gita, right? Positive intention I just made this up, Alex, without concern for results. So this is not about, I'm going to hope that something's going to happen. This is a positive intention to that goes beyond what little thing could happen for you to make your life more better. This is about an intention to make our lives more better. And I go back to this audiobook that we did, the movie of me to the movie of we. This is my... big has been a subject of my interest and concern and work in the last number of years, because I believe that is the core of what we need to do as humans.
I disagree.
You okay? All right. Well, we'll save it for next time. We'll parse that out next time. Great to see you, though, man.
Yeah, it was great reconnecting. Really was.
Yeah.
I think you're bringing a different perspective on this. So it's good.
Yeah, absolutely. Important. Never mind. Good. All right, everybody. Look at this. All of go to Skeptico and or go to Mind Rolling and enjoy this. And again, Alex, I'm really happy we were able to connect.
Absolutely. We won't wait so long for the next time.
No, absolutely not. No, we're going to be in touch because somehow there's a way in which I think you can help us with this science, spirituality, and psychedelic thing. So I will get in touch.
Super.
See you all next week.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye.